Today's sponsor of Last Podcast on the Left is the nerdy subscription service, Loot Crate. If you sign up for Loot Crate, you will receive a monthly box with 6 to 8 cool items like vinyl figurines, comics, shirts, and more. And each month has a specific theme. March's Loot Crate is a dynamite, jam-packed collection of covert operations. You'll find items that celebrate the very best of spies, undercover agents, operatives, and espionage from some of your favorite spy and thriller franchises. So go to lootcrate.com/left and enter the code LEFT, that's L-E-F-T, to save $3 on any new subscription. And now, without further ado, Edmund Kemper, the co-ed killer.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Oh my god, this guy should be in Bartlett's.
If Bartlett's was without fucking a headless dead girl, am I right?
You are right.
I think the whole Bartlett's quotations would be very different if each quote was about having sex with a headless fucking corpse.
I don't know what Bartlett's is.
You've never done a research paper? You've never tried to make an AIM away message, something classy?
Are those cliff notes for smarts?
No. It's books of quotes that I used to read, I guess, in the 7th or 8th grade, then you'd say something like that where it's like, I would fight for truth. I would fight for freedom. But instead, I fight for these laundry bags. Or it's like some weird pithy quote from like Oscar Wilde or something. Yeah. I don't know. I don't make up quotes like that.
No. Half Oscar Wilde quotes.
It's all Oscar Wilde quotes and all just being like, I'd suck a boy's dick if it had cream in it. Oh, wait, it does.
Well,
Oscar Wilde. And they put that on his grave.
I guess depending on the age there. All right, we're ready to start?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. I fucking hope so.
That wasn't your behind-the-scenes banter?
No, I did it for the audience, but I also did it for us.
Thank you. That's Marcus Parks. I'm Ben Kissel. He's taking a sip of coffee right now.
You know, I'll tell you this. You know, I'm feeling a little lonely these days.
Yep.
Things have been really, you know, the apartment's empty. I'm dealing with a lot of stuff.
Really empty.
Really empty.
Yeah, not even a kitchen table.
Not a lot of furniture in my home.
No.
He eats standing up.
I have to because I lost all my furniture.
Oh.
But I'll never be Edmund Kemper lonely.
No. Well.
You know what I mean? That's the thing. Reading about his life, I'll realize, you know what? I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're doing better than Edmund Kemper, Henry. And if that's your base for success, everybody in the free world is doing better than Edmund Kemper.
Everybody but sweet, sweet Edmund Kemper.
That's who we're discussing today. Finally got to the big guy, the massive man, the biggest serial killer that's ever existed,
now,
Mr. Kemper.
In our big hitter series, this guy is sort of like a Randy Johnson.
He's the big unit.
He's the big unit. We got, Edmund Kemper, the co-ed butcher, the co-ed killer, Big Ed.
Friendly dumb Ed.
I wonder how he got that name, Big Ed.
6'9", 300 pounds.
Yikes.
Little chubby.
Oh, I'd hate to be his pants.
Oh, huge.
You know what I mean? He is a very big man. Funny little mustache, which I think is fun. Mm. He was a very sweet guy. Sweet, fun guy.
No.
I mean, in at the cop bar.
Yeah.
Very sweet, fun guy.
And at the highway department, his friend, he had friends, or should we say acquaintances.
He had acquaintances.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Also, what I would say about him is my feelings towards Edmund Kemper is that he's sort of like a Gamergate nerd. He is the type of killer that I find to be the most pathetic.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, Dahmer was tortured and Ted Bundy was another sort of displacement killer that we'll talk about later on in the podcast. But, like, Ted Bundy was kind of, at least he had, like, people around him. He was just a true fucking psychopath. And Charles Manson was getting his dick sucked 24/7. Edmund Kemper really needed, like, mystery from the game. You know
yeah.
what I mean? He couldn't, this is all because he couldn't talk to women.
Yeah. If Edmund Kemper, if he didn't have the childhood that he had, he would have been that really nice guy that worked at the highway department that just watched really fucked up porn.
Maybe. Or he would have been the co-ed killer. Who knows? But yes. I might go with the latter.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, like, let's go first go through a little bit about Edmund Kemper. He killed and defiled six co-eds, his mother and his mother's best friend, over a period of 3 years in Santa Cruz, California, in the early 1970s.
Oh, and I'll also say about him, too, is that I remember researching about him before, but I forgot how defiled these corpses were. This guy. He was a bit of, you know how like Martha Stewart makes like the doilies? It's like, you know, if you leave her alone, you know, she'll shoot out fucking 90 fucking doilies out of her office. Mm-hmm. That's what he was doing with cutting chicks' heads off and sucking on their feet.
Yeah, he was a real wild fella. Can you imagine?
Just leave him alone. Idle hands.
Is there anything more annoying to kill than your mother and her friends? Oh my God. Talking about pinochle constantly.
Well, according to Peter Vronsky, in my favorite serial killer book, Serial Killers, The Method of Madness of Monsters, Kemper could be described as a displacement killer. He killed eight people before he finally killed the person that he wanted to murder all along.
King Koopa.
You got King Koopa?
Hey,
King Koopa's dead! I can't believe King Koopa's dead!
Free!
I love King Koopa! And that plumber was always trying to hurt him.
I don't want to get the cause of the Koopa, but I ended up flying a hammer. Again, oh, it hit me right in my belly buttons.
Oh my God.
Because I have two.
Three times? That's all it took.
No, it was his mother. It was not King Koopa.
Oh, it's
it was his mother. So
also, I feel like that's also very rare in serial killers where they actually got to the source.
Yes.
Where right, a lot of times they'll kill around it because it's like Ted Bundy had built up an image of a woman that he wanted to murder.
Well, it wasn't an image of a woman. It was a woman who had scorned him.
Yes. And so he had went after her for forever.
Yeah, he went after women that looked just like
her. Yeah, with the long brown hair.
Part in the middle.
He actually got it. He actually got the dream.
Yeah.
He got to play for the Yankees.
Got the big prize. Got the World Series ring.
So as far as Santa Cruz, California goes, see, okay, a bit of history about that. In 1965, the University of California opened an adjacent campus. And that
just blew up the hippie population.
Oh, my God, the hippie population, because it was a retirement and tourist community at the time. But within 7 years of the university arriving in Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz became what was known as the murder capital of the world.
Which is so weird because it used to be the boogie board capital of the world. And that's the fastest the boogie board capital of anywhere has turned into the murder capital.
Yeah, oh. I don't think that's ever happened before.
Except for Cleveland.
Not a lot of water.
Yeah, the boogie board phase of Cleveland was short.
Well, they didn't think through.
No. Because all they had were these empty alleyways and burnt out football stadiums.
But it rains every now and again, so you never know when you can use it.
The reason why it was known as the murder capital of the world is because during the period of 1970 to 1973, there was a spate of murders. John Frazier, who was an extremist in the hippie lifestyle, killed a household of five in the Manson family style, meaning he killed them all in one night to stop what he viewed as the spread of progress that was ruining the natural environment.
Well, he's got to kill more than that to do that. And need to be guys driving SUVs. That's the problem.
That's think about that.
Think oh, about yeah. that. Get yeah. Ted Nugent.
Oh, yeah.
Get him then. Go get Ted Nugent.
Herbert Mullen, he killed 13 Santa Cruz residents to, as he claimed, stop a super earthquake from sending California into the ocean.
We don't know that he didn't just save the planet.
That is actually the truth.
So,
he could have been a planeteer.
Exactly.
It could be fire, water, wind, earth, heart, and butchering with knives.
I remember that ring. That was a tough ring to get. Your mother would never buy it for you.
Butchering with knives, bitch.
That's the greatest thing about people who killed for a reason that is supernatural. You never know when they're telling the truth.
You don't know. Maybe it's true. He could have stopped the ghost civil war.
We just don't know, do we now?
Yeah, ghost versus ghost, brother against brother.
Mm-hmm. Let him out. Let him out of prison.
And, of course, Edmund Kemper killed six freewheeling hitchhiking co-eds. And it could be said that there's possibly some sort of cosmic balance here. The love of the hippie movement with the hatred of the rise of serial killers in the late 60s and early 70s.
Why, if your daughter goes to college, get her a car. You know, you
get
cannot have them out there just hitchhiking all over the place. This should be the new Toyota or Nissan commercials. When your daughter's going to college,
like,
do you want
Kemper,
her hitchhiking?
Manson, Bundy.
What were they doing?
Yeah.
They were walking. No one's ever been pulled from their Prius and murdered.
It also could be definitely be proof that hippies are just really easy prey.
Right.
We were actually talking about this, about how, like, yeah, it's really easy to kill a bunch of hippies. Just be, if you're calling yourself fucking Moonbeam and you're not saying, hi, my name's Larry Gilmore to everybody. Nobody knows who you are. Oh, it's easier for you to slide into an orgy and fall off a back deck into a ravine. You know what I mean?
That, like, happened a lot.
How many orgies were dead? Just because slick with lube, smoking a cigarette, just being like, I don't know, I kind of do like the new Beatles. And he literally slips for 3 minutes,
right?
Sliding on his own luby-covered feet, and then shoots over the railing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never seen again.
Thank God.
Well, guys like Kemper, they effectively helped to end the hippie movement.
Yeah, thank you, Edmund Kemper.
And usher in the super violent 70s.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That's a thing.
I like the hippies a little bit.
The hippies were more fun.
The thing is, these girls that he was killing were not even necessarily hippies. They were just college girls. A lot of them were very, because that's the kind of woman that he liked, which was demure, petite, 5'2",
pretty,
buxom, gorgeous women.
Because he said, you know, I ain't the best thing to look at, but, you know, I like a pretty girl.
Yeah, he does like a pretty girl.
He's
unique.
One of those guys. He's one of those dudes that looks like shit. He's fat, but he's like, look at that fucking pig. I'm not going to fuck that fucking pig.
Right. Because it's a problem is that if they got a big, thick old neck, it's so hard to get the bone saw through all that meat. And it's a good, nice, petite young girl. Ooh, so nice. You just take a paring knife, slip, slip, slip. You got a head all your own.
Sure. Yeah, I've seen that infomercial for
Ginsu.
Yeah, for the Ginsu, the ninja knife. I forgot that part of it where they were talking about petite.
Yeah,
women.
Where it's a screaming petite college co-ed tied to a tear, and he just slowly slices through her, and then he's like, and I could still cut through a tomato.
Wow. And it did.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to buy it.
Well, these girls, they were not hippies, but they were still living that kind of hippie lifestyle.
Everyone was just a hippie, influenced, right?
But yeah, pretty much kind of how everyone's just a hipster now. Back then, everybody was kind of a hippie. Now, Kemper, he was among the very first serial killers to talk to the FBI Behavioral Sciences Unit, which really led into serial killer profiling, led to the commission of, like, Wayne Williams and people like that.
This guy loved to fucking talk.
He has among the largest public archives of interviews of any serial killer. He's up there with, like, the Dahmer 2-hour interview.
Yeah.
Kemper has 5 or 6 hours
he could have
of interviews.
He could have gotten into radio.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because, I mean, we already got a 6'7" monster right here.
Hello, how are you?
He would have been perfect for radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of his interviews, he did hours after his conviction.
Yes, and what I actually think is about that, about his personality and feeds that, is that he really was very lonely. He lived a very interior life. We're going to cover it now. He had a very hard time reaching out. That was always his thing. He said that, I want to communicate. I want to talk with people and have them understand me, but I just keep killing them.
He sounds like the Little Mermaid.
He
needs to go confront his Ursula, and he needs to get his goddamn father back.
Little Mermaid 3, Ariel has gotten legs. She is now 6'9", 300 pounds.
Ooh, I love
heaving,
this one.
Heaving monster who's driving around looking for hitchhikers, and who'd she pick up? Sebastian the crab.
Oh my God, right? I hate that Sebastian.
She's got Sebastian in the car, and he's like, Sebastian, where are you going? Going to Palo Alto? Yeah? You going to Palo Alto? Yeah, man! We going to Palo Alto! Yeah, that's cool, huh? Why are you stuck up? Huh? Too good to talk to me? No, I just wanted to sing a song about being under the... I got this pot of water! Pot of water! And he starts boiling on a hot plate in the back seat.
Under the sea.
I'd love that movie.
Well, before we get into his childhood, I just want to make one caveat at the very beginning here. A lot of the information we have about Ed Kemper comes from Kemper himself, but it is worth noting that he gives conflicting information in different interviews.
That is why we'll be discussing Kemper's huge penis over and over and over again, because he brings it up relatively regularly.
No, he tells about 5 different stories.
Yeah.
Yes.
And while the differences, it isn't like a complete completely different story every time. There are, the details are off. And he also gave a different testimony on the stand after he was caught than he did in his confession to police.
The man understands the journalistic idea of that the story is better than the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That if you have the different, if you have the choice between the legend and the truth, go for the legend.
Yes.
That's the Williams effect.
He's actually very good at narrative, honestly.
He's a very good storyteller.
Well, yeah, we'll get into the books on tape.
Oh, yeah. So, Edmund Emil Kemper III was born in...
They didn't try with that middle name very hard.
I think it's Emil.
It's Emil?
No, it's Emil. Do you remember Dragnet? Remember the Dragnet movie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with Emil.
Why would I?
Yeah,
with
you remember...
Everyone remembers the Dragnet movie. Satanism was involved, Henry.
Yeah, how could you not love that? Remember? But I remember the guy that was kind of the henchman, his name was Emil Scuzz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it was pronounced, and it was spelled E-M-I-L, so I know it's Emil.
Great.
Right. We got that.
Is great.
He was born in Burbank, California, middle child and the only son to Edmund Emil Kemper Jr., who came in at 6'8", and his wife, Clarnell.
Yeah, Clarnell is an odd one.
Yeah.
You don't hear that name too often, and I don't ever want to hear it again.
No, because it's for show horses.
It sounds like a way to get popcorn from the back of your... Clarnell.
Clarnell?
Yeah, extremely domineering, violent alcoholic, definitely made a habit of berating Ed in public whenever she could.
It sounds like the first name of, like, a commandant of a police, like, department, or like, you know, like, yeah. Clarnell, get in here! Like,
it's a bizarre one.
She was a big woman as well. She topped out at 6 feet tall.
Yeah, she was a very big, domineering woman. Again, we're going to see this as a constant in many serial killer narratives. She owned Edmund Kemper's life as a child.
Yeah, at the age of 8, she disciplined him by forcing him to sleep in the family cellar for 8 months. The only way he could get out was through an exit, through a trap door that was underneath the family dinner table. So every night, they would pull the dinner table out, let Edmund in, push it back over again, and of course, he couldn't get back out until the next morning.
Trapped. I'm just going to make the case that this sounds like an extremely fun little hiding hole.
It does.
It really sounds awesome. If I sleep under the trap door, under the kitchen, I would be making little army plans.
Yeah, I'd be looking at it and being like, it's like the Goonies.
It would be so exciting.
You just sell it to the kid like it's the Goonies, and then guess what? You don't have to see your kid for a good 8 to 10 hours a day. That's a tip for parents.
It's a tip for parents. Don't let him know you're hiding, you're putting him away because you're worried he's going to molest your daughters or his sisters.
Yeah, you tell him it's a pirate room.
Exactly. Make it fun for the future serial killer.
So Ed's father, when Ed was 9, his father left, sick and tired of Clarnell. After his father left, Ed became a gigantic John Wayne fan.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Gacy-esque.
Yeah, that went all throughout his life. That's one of the ways he was able to ingratiate himself into the cop lifestyle at the jury room where
he would walk in and literally do like John Wayne impressions, and they just loved him.
Yeah.
He really got along with the cops.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
There's something really about a bunch of drunk, mustachioed cops that love a 6'9" woman murderer.
Doing John Wayne impressions. That time doesn't exist any longer. John Wayne was the only dude that was really around. That's what every single guy modeled themselves after.
What about Rock Hudson?
Well, you know.
So Ed's mother constantly compared him to his father. She fucking hated his father.
Have you found any details as to why she hated the father so much, or why she kept saying, because that was the thing, is that she kept saying he was just like his father.
Well, one of the things about his mother is that she was diagnosed with borderline, or they think that she had borderline personality disorder.
Because she became super paranoid about both of them, right?
Yeah, about both of them, about them leaving her. That's one of the signs of borderline personality disorder. She was married 3 times.
So romantic.
Yeah.
She had a problem with relationships. Let's just say that.
All right.
So at the age of 10, Ed already above average size. You know what that's like, Ben.
No, I don't. No.
Yeah, no. No. Ben is...
I am 5'7" tall.
What about Ben, the petite one Kissel?
Yes.
What would he know about above average size?
Yeah. I know nothing about what Edmund Kemper's lifestyle was as a child.
His mother described him as, quote, a real weirdo.
It's because she was obsessed with the idea that he would come out of his room at night and molest his sisters. Yeah. And this is why I'm saying, it's like, yes, I imagine it was partially unfounded because she was mentally ill and she looked at him and she kind of saw his father and she was like, he's going to molest. He's going to molest as soon as the chains comes off. But the problem is that I also think that I feel like the thinking someone's going to molest somebody street is a two-way street. And I think that a lot of the times is that it's probably knowing how Edmund turned out.
Yeah.
That he maybe was given a little bit too hard of a gander at his sisters and his mother possibly saw it. Because we're going to look at this. To me, this is the key to Edmund Kemper's personality.
It really is.
Is that she put him away saying that you're going to molest these kids. Basically, immediately taking the idea of women and these like and placing them on a pedestal above him. And one thing we know is you don't put that pussy on a pedestal.
No. You keep it attached to
the
person.
A taxi driver told me that.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Always take love advice from a taxi driver. That's a great idea.
Yep. Ed, who was, by the way, when he was a kid, he was nicknamed Guy, which is a real weird nickname for a big...
It's like calling somebody a local man.
Yeah. Guy. Yeah.
He was sent to permanently sleep, locked in the basement every single night. The only light was a bare bulb hanging from a wire.
Again, kind of cool. If you're a child, you can play with this.
Say
this
I'm playing. You
dope.
Just tell him again. We're playing the game called Russian Prisoner.
Mm-hmm. CIA interrogation room.
Yep. He said this is where he allowed his hatred of women to fester and grow. Mm. He said he'd stare into the flames at the furnace for hours and later told FBI profilers, this is where he saw the devil's face for the first time.
I remember the devil's face for the first time, and I fell in love.
That's nice.
And I was just sitting there, and I saw it. I looked in the mirror, and I saw a flash of him, and he said, kill people at the mall. And I was just like, you're funny.
Yeah, devil from 1988. No one goes to the mall anymore. Well, where do they go now? Well, they're mostly online. They do a lot of Amazon shopping.
So kill people in their homes?
Okay.
So she put him in that closet to toughen him up.
No, well, that's what he. Well, that's another one of the conflicting things.
He said, but again, if you think he's going to be molesting your daughters, you probably shouldn't be toughening him up, right?
No, you want to weaken him. Yeah, you want to weaken the boy.
So shortly after he got exiled to the basement, he killed the family cat by burying it alive. And that was kind of a revenge, his first revenge against women, because he believed that the cat has switched its attentions from him over to his sisters. And he said that he killed it to, quote, make it mine.
And this is where they should have called the cat daddy, Jackson Galaxy, to fix that cat's temperamental
problems.
Ed's not
a bad man. He's just misunderstood.
Very misunderstood. Or completely understood by his mother. We don't really know.
Yeah, so after burying the cat, Kemper dug it back up again, cut off the head, and mounted it on a stick in his room. And amazingly enough, he was able to talk his way out of it. He was able to lie and tell his mother that, no, I'm not sick, I'm not fucked up. I don't know what he told her exactly to get out of it, but it was the first lie
he
of
probably
that
said
sort.
It.
Yeah, I mean,
Mom, this is what I like to call a stinky lollipop.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was his first experience in hiding the darkness. And being able to persuade people that, no, there is not a necrophiliac murderer behind this facade. This is a regular nice guy.
You got to know if you want to keep that head before you bury it.
That's
true. He just gave himself more work to do. And
pre-planned.
That's really the
travesty. Pre-planned. Yeah. Also, I think that what we're looking at, Edmund Kemper, of all of the killers we've covered, is probably the deepest sociopath of all of them.
Oh, my God.
Where it's like, John Wayne Gacy, I look at him as like, John Wayne Gacy is the ultimate to me in cloaking his personality, right? Where it's like he was a politician, big public figure, but I think, and then secretly was a boy murderer and loved suck. But I think that there is a difference. Like John Wayne Gacy got to do sort of play out his fake personality on a macro level. Like he got to do it in public, on TV, in front of people, like in front of the boys at the fucking lodge and shit like that. Where Edmund Kemper's fake personality was right on top, and it was a personal thing because everyone just said the same thing. It was like, he's a nice guy, he was a sweet guy, and like, because that's his persona, he's this affable kind of guy, but he's a fucking monster.
Yeah.
Well, sure.
And if you watch his interviews, anytime they ask him a question, there is no pause before an answer.
No,
there's no thinking, there is no remorse, there's nothing there. There is just there's not remorse, there's not like, I don't think he ever says like, I shouldn't have done this. It's more like, I did a horrible thing.
Yes.
Like, he doesn't say, he rarely says, I shouldn't have done this. So Kemper, not unlike Dahmer, who, if we remember, played Infinity Land.
Yeah.
Kemper also, he had a weird, bizarre childhood game. His favorite one was Gas Chamber.
Ooh.
Yeah, his sister would tie him up and throw an imaginary switch, and then Ed would tumble to the floor and pretend to die of gas.
It's kind of a funny one.
It is fun, actually. Yeah. Jackie and I used to play animals, where we would pretend to be different animals.
Yeah, that's a normal one. That's a normal one. Yeah, then you kind of relate to the animals, and you don't kill the cat.
And then Paul would come.
No.
And Pa said, which one of y'all is the prairie dog?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, not me again, Daddy. Not me again.
Right, so you're making light of a terrible situation. Mm. I'm happy you got through it, Henry.
So at age 7, he would sneak out of his house with his father's bayonet and go to his second grade teacher's house and watch her through the windows. And he would fantasize, even at this young age, he said. He said he would fantasize about killing her and having sex with her corpse. He said, I knew long before I started killing that I was going to be killing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, but that's a normal cycle. I went through a whole thing. It's like you couldn't even keep a pitchfork around me because I'd take the pitchfork out and I'd go stare at the gym teacher's house, but it was mostly just because I was sick of climbing that fucking rope.
Oh, I hated the rope. The rope was terrible. So he had a real calling.
Oh, yeah, from a very young age. It's like how I always knew I wanted to be in radio.
If he wasn't too big for the Navy, he could have been a good Navyman.
God, if only we could have fit him in a submarine.
Ah.
Oh, my God. So, but when his sister teased him about wanting to kiss a teacher of his, and this actually comes from his sister's testimony on the stand, he said, if I kissed her, I'd have to kill her first. This is at age 7. So this guy had these necrophiliac tendencies from a very young age.
Yeah, but I feel like people, kids are weird.
Kids are super weird.
But that's a little bit stranger than usual. Like, usually kids are just like, I wouldn't kiss her. I don't want to get cooties, you know? And then he's just like, I'll only kiss her after I murder her.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's possible. Or like when kids see ghosts and shit like that.
Well,
that's what's scary when they're like,
yes.
There's a man in the corner. He's got a top hat and he says, end it, mommy.
Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah, it's
talking
weird.
About slavery, huh? Yeah. Isn't that something? The Emancipation Proclamation's coming right from your closet, huh?
So 13, Ed ran away from home, and they were living in Helena, Montana at this point.
Ooh,
and he made it
nice place.
Super awful place. Helena, Montana. God damn.
Helena, Montana?
Yeah.
Sounds like a fatter
Miley Cyrus.
I'm Helena, Montana.
Helena, Montana. No one wants to know my real identity.
Okay. You have a neck beard. We're looking for a 13-year-old girl.
Can I just pretend? Can I just act it?
He ran from Helena, Montana. He made it to Los Angeles, where his father was living.
Tall guy.
Because he said, I'm gonna go live with Daddy now.
Yeah, I'm gonna go live with Daddy because Ed believed that they were very close.
He loved his father and he idolized his father growing up.
Father did not return the sentiment.
No, his ex-wife, his new wife, actually said, please send Eddie away. He gives me migraines.
Yeah. His very presence gave his stepmom migraines.
I mean, he's a huge kind of tartar boy who's like not hers. I would assume that his own mother didn't want him. Would this other lady want him?
Because at this point, he's probably like 6'4". He's a big fucking bungle butt. Is what he even calls himself.
No, it's a bumble butt. Yeah, when he said he's talking about talking to girls, he said, you know, I talk to girls. I was a real bumble butt.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was. He's a bumble butt, and so he's kind of a pain he has to be around. And he's probably knocking over your glass figurines.
Accidentally,
and
though.
Yeah, because he's so big, wobbling his big fucking fat ass all over the fucking
kitchen. I'm
going
to defend him. We live in a world that is not equipped to handle the size of a man who is 6'4", 13.
Just ripping cabinet doors. Off
that is the
knocking over the
stop
refrigerator.
Stop going to shoddy. That's shoddy craftsmanship. It's got to be able to handle a strong pull.
But this is the problem. If it's got to be a specialty house to house your fucking buffalo-like body,
but why does it have to be a specialty house and not just a house?
Because the rest of us are normal size.
Yeah, the vast majority of people. What about all of the little people, Ben? What about them?
What about them?
He's talking about
they're doing great.
He's talking about the grumpy gnomes. That's what I like to call them, and I've heard they actually prefer that term.
Yes.
Grumpies.
Yeah, grumpies are kind of funny, though. Grumpies.
So after he was sent back home, in retaliation, he killed another family cat. This time, he got a little more gruesome with it. He cut off the top of its skull with the machete and exposed the brains, kept the dismembered body in his closet until his mother found the cat parts.
Yeah, it got to stink a little bit.
Yeah, it's gotta be a little smelly. And I heard a psychiatrist, one of these forensic people, talking about why a lot of serial killers, especially serial killers who kill women, kill cats as kids.
Oh,
specifically cats. Yes, symbolically, the cat is a feminine animal.
Yeah, ooh. So it's a slinky thing, and also because... I'll also put it this way, especially in Kemper's case, is that they are selective with their attention.
Ah.
And they are very, and there's something about a, you know, like, maybe if Dahmer had a dog, maybe he would have been fine. Because a dog's always happy to see you, even if you beat the fuck out of it.
Mm-hmm.
A cat, that's hard to get. Even me, and I'm sweet to cats. I nuzzle, and I'll sit on my lap, and I give them treats, and I kiss them, and I smell their paws, and I play with their tails and stuff like that. And even they'll ignore me or run away from me.
Sounds like you terrorize them, and they hate being around you, and you try to bribe them so you can pull their tail.
So shortly after the second cat incident, Ed was sent off to live with his paternal grandparents.
Man, they are passing this buck.
Yeah. My God.
Like, hardcore. Yeah. It's hard to have a bumble butt in the house.
Oh, it is.
So, his grandparents were named Edmund and Maud Kemper.
Ooh, solid people of the earth.
Yeah, very solid people.
Means fat.
Yeah, they gotta be. It's a big family. The whole family's gonna be a little hefty.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was Ed's father who actually sent him to live with his parents, but his mother, who was... who actually was starting to get a pretty good insight into him, she called him up and she said, "You might wake up one day and find they've been killed."
And the way, the huge phones they must have had in both houses.
Oh, yeah.
Comically large phones.
Got to, you know, they got to communicate.
Yeah, and he was, as soon as he got there, he was given a .22 cal rifle. A lot of young kids were. Ed was in the Boy Scouts.
Right.
And in fact, that's where he learned how to use a knife and to, you know, hide grave sites and things like that.
Yeah, the Boy Scouts taught a lot of people how to become future killers.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Is,
yeah.
I mean, that
yeah,
was
yeah.
the intention, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, Hitler created the idea of the Boy Scouts just to make stronger soldiers for the fatherland.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, we're wasting all these soldiers we're building with the knots we're teaching them and the campfire shit that they can set and the selling the cookies if they're a girl one. It's crazy out there how many soldiers we're just letting wither on the vine.
Yep. Yeah, I guess we want more of them. Is that the thing?
But, you know, when they found out that he continued his practice of killing domesticated animals and pets, the gun was taken away. But this being a ranch, they still kept plenty of guns around the
house.
And
that's the thing. Right. Ed's grandmother kept a gigantic .45 in her, I guess it's like her underwear drawer, somewhere in her clothes.
In her dresser. Underwear? In her underwear
but
drawer?
But in her dresser. She kept it one. And she would come out and literally see him just playing with it.
Yeah.
Like, he'd have this gun and be like, making fucking sauce with it and, like, cooking eggs with it and shit like that. And so it got to a point where... She'd have to take it with her places. And Kemper would say he'd watch her leave with her purse jam-packed. And he's like, "What's in your purse, Grandma?" She's like, "Oh, nothing, Ed. Nothing, just going to the store." And he's like, "Looks like you got your gun in there, Grandma." She's like, No. Just gonna go to the store." And then she goes to the store, and then he'd go look for the gun. And she's like, "And would you believe it? She took her gun like she didn't trust me with it."
I can't believe it.
And that's literally in the interview hours after he murdered, after he confessed to all the murders.
Yeah.
So he's literally just being like, "And you believe she'd take the gun, like, from me?"
That's unbelievable, Ed.
Yeah. And in August of 1963, shot his grandmother in the back of the head as she was sitting at the table reviewing a children's story she had just written.
Oh, she wrote it?
Yeah,
it was
she
all
wrote
about,
it.
You
was
know
it
when
called
your
the mouse and the brain splatters?
Yeah, when your grandson comes from behind you and blows your brains out, and then he fucking blew her brains out.
Fired two more shots into her back and then stabbed her. But, you know, some people say three times seems to be the consensus of how many times he stabbed her in the back.
So he shot her thrice and stabbed her thrice.
That's
and then
right.
when his grandfather came home, he fucking shot his grandfather, according to him, because you're gonna also see this a lot, where he's like, I wanted to save him the sight of my dead grandmother.
Oh, yeah. That's nice, Ad.
Yeah. But he says this all the time. It's a pretending thing. It's a distancing thing. He says this all the same thing with the girls, where he was like, when the first double murder he does, and he separates them, and he's like basically just being like, because I wanted to be nice to the nice blonde one that was sitting in the front with me, and I wanted to save her the sight of watching her best friend get murdered. And it's a distancing, and it shows how much of a sociopath he is, because he thinks by saying that, he's saying that for our benefit, yeah. not his. He's saying that so he feels better in the moment.
Closest thing he can come to compassion.
Yes. And because he says here, when he asks why he shot his grandmother, he says, I just wondered what it felt like to shoot grandma. But that could also have been a part of the fact that a lot of his stories were trying to get an insanity plea going for himself. And then because in another interview, he says he shot his grandmother because she reminded him so much of his mother.
Yeah, because she was pretty domineering as well, which might tell you why Ed Sr. married Clarnell in the first place. Yeah. Well, a lot of times men marry their mothers.
It does seem like Ed needed some structure. So I might say I'm going to err on the side of the women in both of these cases, because it seems like Edmund Kemper was a sociopath.
He needed a tiger mom.
Yes, he did.
Well, he was declared a paranoid schizophrenic by a court. He was 15 at the time and sent to Atascadero State Hospital in the criminally insane unit. There, California Youth Authority psychiatrists and social workers strongly disagreed with the psychiatrist's diagnosis. They said, no, he is not a paranoid schizophrenic. He's a fucking sociopath.
Yeah, he's he's an empty vessel.
Yeah,
and you're going to watch him play this system in this hospital.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they said he showed, quote, no flight of ideas, no interference with thought, no expression of delusions or hallucinations, and no evidence of bizarre thinking. He was diagnosed as having personality trait disturbance, passive-aggressive type.
All right.
Interesting. It quickly would boil into aggression, I guess. And he was 17 at this point, right? Or like 16?
15.
Okay, cool.
15 when he killed him. 16 by the time he got to Atascadero.
You described every comedian I know. He's just a young, up-and-coming. If there was just some more open mics around, he could have been spinning some wonderful jokes at random saloons.
He was just a shame. Just too tall to be on TV.
Mm-hmm. I know that feeling. Thanks, Hollywood. Sorry, I'm not a pedophile.
It's
I'm not in your circle.
The rest of us are tiny. All the actors are so tiny.
But they look so fat on screen, and then you meet them in real life, and they're so cute and tiny and small.
So he started working at this mental hospital, and he managed to worm his way again using his. This is where you're going to see it. He's so affable and friendly and easy to like as a guy. He became immediate best friends with a psychologist.
Well, the reason why he was able to ingratiate himself with the psychologist, much like he would with the cops later, Atascadero had 1,600 patients. Dozens of them were murderers. Over 800 were rapists, and there was a psychiatry staff at only 10.
Yes, and so they're
Kemper,
looking.
Yeah, he's not the worst one there by any means.
But they're also looking for allies.
Yeah.
They want allies. Because everybody does. Because even in the end, it's like in prison too. It's like prison guards will match up with prisoners and befriend them to basically find out if shit's going on the inside. You get advanced warning of stuff. But so when they befriended each other, and again, I mean, he's 15. He seems like that's what he said. It just seemed like he was just a lost, friendly kid.
And by the way, his IQ tested at 140.
Yes.
Near genius level.
And so while he was working with the psychologist, basically it made him sort of like his little assistant, he had access to hundreds of case studies, which went into grisly detail about like crimes and rape. And like basically he figured out how to use and also like results of psychology tests and stuff like that.
Yeah, he learned all the methods. He learned how these, and most importantly, he learned how these guys got caught. And the most important lesson that he learned from these guys, as far as killing goes, is that you do not leave any witnesses when you rape someone. That's how all of these, don't leave any witnesses.
You would think that's 101.
And you don't leave any physical evidence.
Oh, I thought rape 101. I mean, the first lesson, I think, if I were to teach a class called rape 101, I'd be like, don't do it, guys.
Well,
that
right.
That would be day one. Day two.
I tricked you coming in here. Don't do it.
But he also said, I mean, he was also just jerking off to all the pictures of raped women and all the people telling about what they raped. raped and what they did when they raped, and he was just jerking off, having a great time.
And you see, you saw this also with Richard Ramirez. This is a very important time in the development of your sexuality.
Yes.
And both of these guys, their sexuality got tied up with violence and rape at a very young age.
Because he started realizing, because he felt so awkward about himself personally that he, I feel like he got an idea at an early age of like, if I want it, I gotta go take it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And about his worth ethic, the psychiatrist that he befriended, he wrote, he was a very good worker, and this is not typical of a sociopath. He really took pride in his work.
Yeah, because his work was thumbing through grotesque pictures of raped women that he was coming to.
Yeah, he was having
a great
time.
It was his dream job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he would help administer tests to other prisoners, and in the process of administering these tests to him, he got an extremely clear idea of what psychiatrists considered insane and sane. So he was able to play the system to such a way where by the time he was 21, only did 5 years in this hospital for killing both of his grandparents.
Right.
By the time he was 21, he had convinced the psychiatrist that he was ready to go out back into the outside world.
They thought he was cured.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's
yeah.
always good to send him out there just as soon as they can start drinking hard. You know, that's great. That's going to be perfect for the sociopath.
And we're going to see a time now. So now that he's out of jail and he's 21, we're going to basically see the same thing happen to him that happened to Manson, is that in those 5 years he was gone, when he comes out on the other side, the hippie movement's now going on.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And he missed the whole beginning.
Yeah. And he missed his adolescence completely. From 16 to 21, the only people he hung out with were middle-aged men and rapists.
Right. I mean, but he definitely a better environment than the one that he was in previously, it sounds like.
Well, I don't know, though.
And speaking of that, when he was released, psychiatrists, all of them, strongly recommended that he not live with his mother.
And they sent him straight to his mother.
They recommended, it's like, put him in a halfway house.
I thought they recommended that he go play basketball.
Oh.
Hey, Edmund, do you play basketball? No, I am a serial killer.
You know what's
okay.
so funny? I was in a Target the other day, and a guy, this janitor was there, was cleaning the floor, and he said to me, he's like, man, if I was your height, I'd be playing basketball to Kissel while I was standing next to him. Yeah, that's a great bit. Ben Kissel does a stand-up bit.
A stand-up comedy bit. Stand-up comedy bit.
So the two, after Ed moved back in with his mother, the two moved to Santa Cruz, where Clarnell, now with the last name Strandberg.
Oh, yeah.
Clarnell Strandberg, she became an administrative assistant at the University of California.
And this is going to be his gateway drug to all of these poor women.
Now, this is a very interesting fact right here, is that his mother was extremely popular and very helpful at her job on campus.
Yeah,
everybody loved her.
That's how it always is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that his mother wasn't crazy. She nailed it.
I think
he's a sociopath.
She saw it when he was a baby. It was like literally a thing where she saw him. He was always weird. He was always a little fucked up, and she was looking at him and just being like, I must kill it.
You send them to a therapist.
Yes.
Well, you don't send them to the basement.
It doesn't matter. Either way, she harvested this demon creature inside of her womb and then birthed the monster. It's disgusting.
It's disgusting.
So she was divorced for the third time, and she blamed Ed for all of it. She said, because of you, my murderous son, I haven't had sex with a man in 5 years.
Oh, it's
because
your bush is all hairy, and it smells like random tuna.
Yeah, it's because you look like if Hakeem Olajuwon had sex with the Wicked Witch.
Come on. Yeah, don't blame Ed on the fact he can't get any dong.
Yeah, you're a 6-foot-tall monster woman.
So Kemper got a job with the California Highway Department, moved to a tiny little apartment of his own, but couldn't escape his mother. His mother would constantly call him. She dropped that by the apartment unannounced.
What is wrong with this woman?
She's trying to make sure he's not raping anybody.
Well, I just feel like if you don't like your son, leave him alone.
I don't know. I think she... I'm starting to completely turn. I used to blame the mother, but now I just think she is trying to stop a massacre from
happening. Now I'm blaming the mother. You gotta leave this kid alone.
So Kemper, what he really wanted to be a cop.
Of course
he
did.
They all want to be cops.
He tried to get a job with the California Highway Patrol, but he was too big.
Yeah, it's not the Monster Squad. He has bolts on the side of his neck. The guy looks like Frankenstein. There's no way.
You mean to tell me? I think cops should be 6'9", 300 pounds.
Well, he wanted to be a chip. He wanted to be the guy on the motorcycle.
That's a problem. He looked like a bear on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
He looked like a circus act. Him driving past. They'd be like, look at this guy.
I agree. Bigger cops. Big cops don't shoot. We can just grab them. You just grab people and hold on to them.
Yeah, they swing arms like Andre the Giant from The Princess Bride.
Yeah, that would be amazing if someone just knocks on the top of your car and you're just like, oh, and then you're just like looking at his dick and, officer, what? Where are you? And he's way up there. Isn't that cute?
Because of how tall he is?
Because of how tall he is. Did he play basketball?
You lived a life of pain, Kissel. I can hear it.
No, I didn't.
So he...
I didn't. I don't know nothing, man.
So instead, since he couldn't join the highway patrol, this is when he starts hanging out with cops.
You know what? This is so... it's a little bit different, but my uncle was too fat for the army. I swear to God. I just remembered this. And he came back and he was super sad, but he loved the army. And then he became a police officer because he was only 6'3", and they let him in.
And yeah, exactly. And you can't be too fat to be a cop.
No. That was a requirement.
Yeah, you can be too tall, but you can't be too fat.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. But yeah, he was too fat for the army. I'll never forget when he got back that day. He was crying. But I was just like, you're fat. You are very fat, Uncle Grant. And that's why I'm named after
him. Yeah. They would literally just use you as a body shield.
I don't know why you wanted to go so bad.
So he started going to this place called the jury room.
Which is weird that it's a cop bar because the one thing cops hate to do is go to fucking court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's weird.
Like jurors.
Yeah, it's the worst thing for him. And he was able to go here. He was able to sneak his way into the cop circle because he was this big genial guy. He was just seen as like a harmless eccentric. They called him a cop groupie.
Yeah, they call it because that happens a lot. And again, it's like Charles Manson, the music scene, where it's just like a guy, a guy in the background who's just like, you guys want to hear, Jumpin' Jack Flash on the jukebox again? I know it's been 7 times, but it's kind of my favorite.
It is a fun one, but this is totally different than Manson because Manson was like, fuck the pigs. You know, he was total counterculture, and this is like the hippie movement. And where this is like the 70s now.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I'm going to start loving the cops. He was super, peak of when everybody hates him.
He was very conservative because he was more comfortable in the conservative world because he was so uncomfortable with himself.
Well, and it's because also you have that same thing with Ted Bundy. He's a good old Republican boy.
Oh yeah,
you know, I mean, it's you have the facade. That's what Republicans. Every time they have a sex scandal, it's so much more depraved than anybody
it's just
else.
So
or
much
depraved.
It's just obvious.
Yeah,
it's just anybody who wears a suit for a living is getting his dick sucked by a boy somewhere. That's how that shit goes.
It's possible. I don't know.
Any man you see who gets his like shoes polished at the airport has had sex with a dead woman.
Well, you got to get the evidence off of it, I guess.
Oh, here's something real cute. One police officer even gave him a Police Academy trainee's badge and a little identification card so he could pretend.
I'm 22 years old, sir. You can have a real badge. I need a real badge.
I would just be using Ed to fucking give me the airplane all the time.
Oh,
like lay
fun.
On top of his feet going, like, I'm flying.
So in the middle, when Ed started killing later on, in the middle of his murder spree, he'd go to the cop bar and the cops would freely discuss details of the case with him. Most importantly, they would tell him what traps they were setting. They would tell him what sort of methods they were using to try to catch him. So he had the inside information on everything.
Yes, but then it also made him super paranoid, which we'll see too, it made him kind of expand on that, on his own, thinking they were onto him and shit like that, when the cops actually had nothing.
Yeah.
What kind of traps were this? Any like glue traps?
Random
bear traps?
They were doing it.
Well, I got a ham sandwich and I tied it to a tree. So as soon as he attacks that, we found our killer.
A Christmas tree and put a bunch of free presents around it and put a sign on it that said free presents. Right. And then they'd leave a window open to a room and they'd do is put a bunch of tacks underneath the windowsill.
And micro machines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ed, as we said earlier, he completely missed the 60s and completely missed his adolescence altogether. So he felt like a big old bumble butt. And, you know, like I said, he wanted to be a Chips. He wanted to ride a motorcycle. So he bought a motorcycle for himself, wrecked it.
Oh.
Bought another motorcycle, wrecked it.
Oh, Bumblebutt. Because not only is Bumblebutt a feeling and a persona, but it's also an actual syndrome. His butt was 5 feet across.
It would bumble. Yeah.
And it's honestly, no, he's kind of pear shaped. He's got a big old swinger on the bottom of him.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to stay on a motorcycle.
Oh, poor guy. Yeah. So, and then when you see a 6'9" guy fall off a motorcycle, you don't have to help him up because he's big enough to do it himself. You just laugh at him.
Yeah.
Well, the second one wasn't his fault. So he got a settlement out of that, and with his settlement, he bought a yellow Ford Galaxy.
Yeah.
Cool.
And he figured something. He figured out a plan to, I guess, get to know people of the younger generation. He's going to start picking up female hitchhikers.
Oh, that's now, a great way. Before Tinder.
And now, what he said, what he has said, which I don't know if I believe or not, is that he was not necessarily rehearsing to start killing.
Yeah.
But what he would do is he would go and pick up a girl on the street. If you see a girl walking by herself, he said originally he'd pick up anybody.
Yeah.
But then it started to be only women, and then he would kind of pepper them with conversation and learn from them what things they like to see in male people who pick up hitchhikers for, and, that are men, and what makes them feel comfortable and stuff like that. And he would talk to him, and he would start to have sexual fantasies. And what we're going to see in this time period is what we talk about all the time about, like, serial killers give themselves little allowances. Mm-hmm. And they do a thing where they'll be like, well, now I can do a little bit like I can kind of expand. And they kind of accidentally find themselves completely rigged up to be a murderer.
It's like Gary Ridgway, where he starts going to prostitutes, and then he says, like, okay, well, now I can get a little rougher with them. Now I can start choking them a little bit while I have sex with them. And then eventually he accidentally chokes one to death, finds out that it makes him calm fucking buckets.
Yards.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's sort of like kind of like Ben Bailey's Cash Cab, you know?
Yeah, it's like
you
Cash kinda,
you
Cab.
Have him and you start it off easy, you know, yeah, but yeah. Then, of course, it gets much, much so, more difficult to survive.
He said he compared it to chess. Yeah. It's like, it was like a chess game that he would, like, learn from them, ask them, so, like, what he felt comfortable. And he said what he would do is, he's just like, literally, he was like, now you can't do it. You're just driving your car around. You can't just yank the wheel over and pick up a girl because they're going to know you've been drooling over them for about a mile. So what you got to do is you got to pull over. You got to look at your watch and act like, do I even have time for this? Look, and like, so he had this system then.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a definite system, and he had been developing a persona for himself that would be helpful throughout, the next few years, the gentle giant persona. You know, something like he's just a big guy. He's really nice. He can look a little bit off, but no. He's just kind of awkward. Right.
He said women would open the door, look at him, and be like, oh, I'm just looking at a, like, he literally used the term. He's just like, oh, he's just a big old dork.
Yeah.
I can get in the car with this dork.
Yeah.
Because he is.
Yeah.
He just happens to be a dork that's 300 pounds and fucking wants to rape your dead body. You know what I mean?
He's a dork.
That's a dork.
So when people are like, oh, you big old dork, they're like, oh, you're 6'9", you want to have sex with women's heads?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So as Henry said, the behavior started to escalate. First, it started with groping women. Groping women, and then he started practicing techniques for trapping the girls in the car with them
because he had a coupe.
Yeah.
Right. So it was one of those where it was a four-seater, but it had just one side door.
Yeah.
And so what he would do is, because he was so big, he said he would start playing this game when he'd have a hitchhiker in there and be like, I think your door is open. And he can reach across them, go to the handle, and what he would do, he'd palm a chapstick, and he'd pop open the door and close it again, and then drop the chapstick behind the door handle so that it wouldn't open.
Yeah.
So they are trapped in the car.
Classic.
And he would do this as dry runs often. And then be like, oh, something must be wrong with this door, and then go fix it and let him out.
Yeah. So eventually he started carrying a gun underneath his seat. Like, that's how that was the next escalation. That was the next allowance. Then he started keeping plastic bags, knives, a blanket, and handcuffs in the trunk of his car. And by his estimation, he said that he picked up around 150 hitchhikers, any of whom could have been chosen, 150 with the gun,
right,
and with all of the equipment in there, like any of the 50. And then he said he finally felt the inner drive, the urgent need. He called it his little zapples.
Oh, yeah. Little zapples sounds like it's kind of fun, though.
It sounds like a hostess cake.
Yeah, well, I love a little zapples. It's got a little strawberry filling.
But also, during this time period, he would kind of go into an inner monologue with himself with these, because that was kind of his problem, is because he could not broach conversation with these women properly. and connect to them.
He was nailing it.
But not
they were
really.
Getting into his car.
No, because they were at a distance to him. He started to view some as friendly and some as haughty. And it was like, and he would begin to, because he kind of had a Madonna horror complex, like obviously, where he'd be like.
He thought he was a Madonna. He thought he was a whore?
No, it's like he viewed women as either innocents or sluts. And that was it. That's the only spectrum he had. So it's like if she was, or like someone that was like, thought that she was too good for him. Like, because that's what his mom would say. His mom was like, basically leading up to that, he was like, he wanted his mom to introduce him to girls on campus. And she said, no, mm-hmm. because they're too good for you.
Well they were.
Yes, exactly. That's what I said at the beginning. He's that big, dumpy guy who says, you know what? You know, for me, only thing for me is a pretty girl. I can't have like I can't have a girl that's a little frumpy. I have to have a pretty girl.
He's like Clark Griswold's, what is it, cousin or whatever, who rolls over in the trailer home during Christmas Vacation.
Oh, Cousin Ed.
Cousin Ed.
I don't got a job. I'm holding out for a management position. I'm holding out for a management position. Yeah, the shitter's full. It's like this guy is totally, this is where the delusional aspects of his personality really come through. The idea that he thinks he could get an attractive girl.
Well, it's also like Henry said, these are the Gamergate guys.
These are Gamergate guys.
I don't even know what Gamergate is.
Well, I mean, it's okay, so it's the types of guys that's like, all women are fucking bitches.
Because they won't talk to them and they view because they can't connect to anyone,
yeah.
They start viewing people as like, you just think you're too fucking good for me, you fucking bitch.
Exactly.
They probably are.
And it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, you know what, girls always go for the assholes. Why can't they go for a nice guy like me?
They go for a lot of nice guys. You're probably the asshole.
And so Edmund Kemper's nice guy and the real monster became so separated.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like now you're looking at it's like the nice guy, it's true, because he's so always like, why could they just be with the nice guy like me? But the problem is that because he's a sociopath, he's forgotten that the nice guy persona is completely constructed.
Yeah.
It's like that's the most convenient part about a sociopath is that you can create your fake personality and then it just kind of lives like a tulpa. Like it's now like it lives. Now the nice guy Edmund Kemper is the real guy to you. But he's still separate because he talks about it all the time about how there's two of him and that there's and the one of them that's it's the inner monologue him is the one that's actually sitting in the driver's seat staring at the women just being like, you think you're too fucking good for me. That's what this is. You think you're too fucking good.
If there's two of them, they're definitely stacked on top of each other. He is very tall. But if he...
The thing is that I really feel like the police, they really did a bumble up of the job when they didn't realize he was just seven kids in a trench coat.
Oh, my God. You have to always look out. Is it a raccoon in a bunch? Yeah. If he wouldn't have crashed his motorcycles, he could have never picked up hitchhikers, huh?
Yeah. He probably would have saved up for it. I bet he was really good at, like, pinching pennies, like, saving up his money.
When it comes to buying the things he loves.
It's like if Hitler was nowadays and we could have just gotten him a tablet, he would have been an artist. Let's go into it. So he's ramped up now and he's ready to go. He is primed to kill.
So yeah, that's the end of...
The end of the beginning.
This is like a lot of these heavy hitters where it's like you have to... before you hear about the murders, you have to understand the man.
Because he is... To be honest, he's both... very unique of a killer, but also we see a lot of the same strains, a lot of the same signs of somebody. It's just what he does next.
Yeah.
His crimes. So basically what you got is an informational episode of the next episode. It's all about that head rape.
But we still don't know if he played basketball.
He did not.
He did not.
Oh, he never did?
He absolutely never did. And as far as like Kemper goes, understanding this guy, I think he is both typical and atypical, but like a lot of serial killers, there are levels. There, like, you can compare Kemper to a lot of different guys, as we have. You could also compare Bundy to a lot of different guys.
Yes, I mean,
you could compare Gacy. Like, Gacy is a small town politician with delusions of grandeur.
Also kind of a bumblebutt.
John
Wayne Gacy was a charmer.
But he also killed 30 kids.
I want to put this question to you. We talked about this the other night. We were pretty hammered. When are we going to get the next one?
Yeah,
the next big hitter.
I don't think it. I don't think it's ever going to happen again.
Oh, we'll get it. It's happening right now. We just don't know about it. Nah. Absolutely.
What was he? Just it's weird how you said that and like your eye like twitched.
No.
Sweat, like ran down.
The comedian killer. No. I'm far too large.
No, you really can't. Edmund Kemper opens the Jackie Robinson of fucking Paul.
That is true, but there's cameras and everything. There's no way to kill anymore. The next killer.
You thought
we're
about it?
No, I never thought about it. The next killer we're going to see is going to be like in the woods of Montana or something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, it's two reasons. I think it's cameras, and I think it's Facebook.
We also had Chris Kyle, by the way, who wrote a book about it.
Yeah, he killed
241. He was our guy, and we made him an easy
hero. Our government made him.
So that was our last serial killer, for better or for worse.
So the first thing, also just want to say, really sorry about the UK tour.
It's against our,
it's out of our control. We found out about it, like you guys found out about it, like pretty much kind of dropped in our lap. We are coming, it's looking like October. Is when we haven't gotten concrete dates yet, but we are coming to the UK. You have no idea how much we fucking wanted to go.
Yeah.
It's just beyond our control.
I packed all the beer in my bags already.
Which is weird because we said that they invented fucking beer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They sell Bud Light there.
I know. I was going to bring some over, though, too, just so we could look at the cultural differences between the cans.
But we will fucking get there. I also want to plug my friend's Kickstarter called Frankenstein Created Bikers. I'm going to put it on the Facebook page. It's a fucking going to be a nuts movie.
Yeah.
This is if you should watch the film Dear God No. And you'll see what it is. A bit of it's a rape horror.
All right.
Well, you know, Devil's Rejects has elements of
that. Yes, it's the same thing. It's like Devil's Rejects. It's pretty intense. It's kind of like a grindhouse movie.
Seen a good grindhouse in a while.
Well, for your Last Podcast on the Left t-shirt, be sure to go to cavecomedyradio.com/lastpodcastontheleft. $25 domestic, $40 international. Mm-hmm. Go to iTunes, rate and review, and be sure to follow us on Twitter. That's Twitter at LP on the Left, and go to Facebook and join the group. We got almost 4,000 members on the Facebook group
and
now.
Subscribe to iTunes. Please rate us 5 stars. If not, go fuck yourself.
All right. That's Henry Loves You on Twitter. I'm at Ben Kissel. That's at Marcus Parks on Twitter.
Hail Satan. Oh, Satan, thank you for the strength that you've given me these last few days. And I just want to say, please let me control the storms.
Okay. This is you full of strength?
Sort of.
All right. All right, let's do a hail yourselves, everybody. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you so much for supporting all the shows here on CCR.
And hail Gein. And Magoosalations.
Oh, yeah, Magoosalations.
Hey, guys, take a close off.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.